Second Testament reading this morning is taken from the Gospel of Luke, chapter 10. I'll give you some time if you want to look it up and read along with me. Chapter 10, verses 38 to the end of the chapter. It's not very long, mind you. Now as they went on their way, he entered a certain village where a woman named Martha welcomed him into her home. She had a sister named Mary who sat at the Lord's feet and listened to what he was saying. But Martha was distracted by her many tasks. So she came to him and asked, "Lord, do you not care that my sister has left me to do all the work by myself? Tell her then to help me." But the Lord answered her, "Martha, Martha, you are worried and distracted by many things. There is need of only one thing. Mary has chosen the better part, which will not be taken away from her." This, too, is the Lord's word. Thanks be to God.
The Lord be with you. Not that long ago, I think it was the fifth Sunday of Lent, I was preaching, and we were in the town of Bethany, in the home of Lazarus, and it was a story from the 12th chapter of John's Gospel. There we saw Martha serving a meal. Jesus and his disciples are in recline around the table. And in that story, we saw Mary, where she broke an incredibly expensive bottle of perfume open and anointed Jesus' feet. For good measure, in the story, Judas chimes in. He heaps some scorn and some judgment on Mary, calling this act a waste of good funds. This money could have been given to the poor, he says. In the end, of course, Jesus defends Mary's over-the-top gesture, an extravagant, over-the-top, incredibly generous gesture. He says that she had done something prophetic, something beautiful, something to celebrate his presence with them in the days before he was going to go to Jerusalem, in the days before he went to the cross. As you've just heard, today's gospel text, this time in Luke's account, finds us in a familiar scene in a certain village where a woman named Martha has welcomed Jesus into her home. Now, just so we're clear, I don't have some sort of Mary-Martha agenda. You can take that up with the compilers and editors of the lectionary, whoever they are. I have this thing where they give me the gospel passage and I'll preach on it. So, here we go. Martha, by the way, her name actually means lady of the house, or the mistress of the house. And quite suitably, she's tending to the chores in the way only a thoughtful hostess would. At least, well, it starts out that way, right? Interestingly enough, in John's gospel, we're told that it's Lazarus' house. But as Luke tells it, we're in Martha's home. Martha clearly runs the show. And I would say this is a story about Martha. And then, of course, then there's Mary, her scene-stealing sister, who's not helping with any of the chores at all. And she's sitting at the feet of Jesus, his number one fan. She's hanging on his every word. And so, frustrated by her many tasks and tired of Mary's idleness, Martha, in really a super passive-aggressive maneuver, snaps at Jesus and says, "Lord, do you not care that my sister has left me to do all the work myself? Tell her to help me." Now, this may seem like a familiar domestic drama. if you have a sister maybe. But this story has been winked at. It's been caricatured. It's been referenced. It's even practically been written in stone. Maybe it has been written in stone somewhere. One really good example that I can think of is the process that, the ceremony and the ritual that Canadian engineers go through when they graduate. Even our recently graduated Patrick Boyd got his iron ring and participated in the iron ring ceremony when he completed his degree. The ritual for the ceremony, interestingly enough, was written by none other than the celebrated poet and author Rudyard Kipling. And he wrote a poem that's part of the ceremony called The Sons of Martha. Now, it's quite a long poem. I won't read the whole thing to you. You can Google it up on the interwebs. But I'll read a couple of my favorite lines, if you like. Because she had lost her temper once, and because she was rude to the Lord, her guest, her sons must wait upon Mary's sons, world without end, reprieve, or rest. Or another one about Martha's sons. They do not preach that their God will rouse them a little before the nuts work loose. It's one of my favorite lines there. And also, the sons of Mary smile and are blessed. They know the angels are on their side. They know in them is the grace confessed, and for them are the mercies multiplied. They sit at the feet and they hear the word. They see how truly the promise runs. They have cast their burden upon the Lord, and the Lord, he lays it on Martha's sons. Engineers out there, is that how you feel about us, really? I don't know. Okay, maybe. In short, Martha is the realist. She's the nuts and bolts, task-oriented worker. She's behind the scenes with the stagehands. She's all dressed in black, or she's with the kitchen crew and the sound guys. She's got an apron, sturdy, very sensible shoes. She's maybe a Leatherman multi-tool and some duct tape. Martha gets things done. Sure, sometimes she's a little cranky, maybe a little overbearing. But I'm sure we've heard or said something to the tune of, but without the Marthas among us, where would we be? And as for Mary, well, I guess that means she's the other sort. Not really helpful in a Martha sort of way, but mystical, contemplative. She's spiritual, prayerful, deep. Or maybe when we're annoyed with her, she's we're frustrated by her. She's a scatterbrain. She's got her head in the clouds, a space cadet. She's just plain flaky. Maybe she's so heavenly minded, she's no earthly good. Male or female, there are many times when we've referenced the Marthas and Marys among us. Now, maybe these handy one-dimensional characters have been useful now and then, not only in forming the ritual of the calling of an engineer, but for a general description of the temperament and movements in church life. Over the years, more often than you'd think maybe, I've heard lessons to the effect that say, well, I guess some of you really are Marys, and some of you really are Marthas. Some of you help us get things done, and some of you keep things nice and spiritual. I'd say, maybe, for my money, that lesson is a little too tidy. Now, I'm not saying that our temperaments and our personalities don't play a role in our life together as God's people. As our very own Joyce Bellows, who's downstairs with the kids, will tell you, you can ask her after the service over coffee, we each worship and serve according to our different styles, according to our temperaments, according to our character and our outlook. What I am saying right now, at least, I think we need to dig a little deeper if we'll get past this one-dimensional caricature to find the gospel in this gospel, especially when we add what Jesus says to the mix. He says, Martha, Martha, you're worried and distracted by many things. There's need of only one thing. Mary has chosen the better part, which will not be taken away from her. I would say that how we read or how we misread this last part makes all the difference to the story. For a start, is it really just a matter that Martha is too worried and distracted? Martha, Martha, you're much too uptight. Everything's going to be all right. Quit, just chill out, Martha. Could this be a sermon about distractions and worries and busyness? Is the message here just don't be so distracted, don't be so worried? For me, that doesn't hold up either, although, again, it's true. But I'm digging a little deeper, hoping to find the gospel in Luke's gospel. Especially because in this last part, at first glance, Jesus seems to be taking Mary's side. There is need of only one thing. Mary has chosen the better part. Is Jesus calling Martha's busy, hands-on work of hospitality and service inferior to Mary's, whatever she's doing? If Mary has chosen the better way, then I guess you contemplatives, you spiritual sorts, can all pat yourselves on the back. It's a good thing you haven't troubled yourself with all that second-rate getting stuff done. For almost 2,000 years of congregational life, whenever this interpretations of things has popped up, and believe me, it's popped up plenty, the so-called Marthas among us typically cringe or glare or roll their eyes. The more vocal will utter a restrained retching sound or an exaggerated sigh. And really, can we blame them? Even a quick perusal of the rest of Scripture demonstrates the flaw of this reading as well. Ours is the God who has declared that obedience is better than ritualistic sacrifice. This is a God who asks for justice and mercy and humility from his people and calls these things good. This is the God who's called Abraham out to build a nation of people and made him famous as a person with incredible hospitality, even as our First Testament reading told us today. Hospitality was part of what it meant to be Jewish. The things that we're talking about, the things that God calls us to, so often happen in action, with sweat, with rolled up sleeves. In the Gospels, Jesus affirms hospitality, scolds people when they don't show hospitality. He commends acts of kindness and service and declares that even a cup of water given in his name is a blessed act. In John 13, Jesus even puts on a towel and washes the disciples' feet dressed as a servant and tells them to do the same. This is the same Jesus who commended Mary's over-the-top act of generosity and hospitality when she cracked open a small fortune in perfume and dumped it on his dusty feet. Now, I've only scratched the surface of our scriptures, but time and again we are told that our acts of prayer and our acts of worship are intimately linked to our acts of work and service. One informs the other. One shapes the other. The gospel of Jesus Christ calls us to rest, calls us to freedom and peace, but it also calls us and sends us. It sends us to serve a logistically complicated and needy planet full of equally complicated and needy people. As James puts it quite bluntly, faith by itself, if it has no works, is dead. A lot of commentators have wrestled and struggled with this passage and what seems to be in contradiction in Jesus' statement here with so many other things that he said in the Gospels. And I would say that often what they're doing is taking for granted the notion that Jesus was choosing sides in a showdown between two ways of living. Two ways of responding to God. Mary and the mystics versus Martha and the worker bees. Or maybe we've got that part wrong. Maybe we could try working with the possibility that Jesus is not criticizing Martha for her service, declaring it inferior, but correcting some other oversight, something she's missed in her distraction. For a start, let's be clear. This is a short passage. And if you take a moment to look in your pew Bible, you'll notice that the one really critical line, "There is only need of one thing," is actually quite a contested passage of Scripture in the original manuscripts that we have. Moreover, the story is troubled because there's no further explanation. There's no further conversation. Luke hasn't necessarily made it easy for us. So where do we go from here? For a start, I'd say we should step back and look at the Gospel of Luke as a whole. If you read Luke's Gospel start to finish, you find, and I'm sure I've said this before, that he's got a soft spot for showing how Jesus has got a soft spot for outsiders and losers, lepers and shepherds and Samaritans and poor people. In a first century society with sharp divides in politics and religion, racial tension, social standing, Luke takes great delight in redrawing the playing field, focusing the spotlight on the little people. This is demonstrated time and again as Jesus sits and eats with sinners and outcasts, tax collectors, and other scoundrels. Even as Jesus hung on the cross, Jesus declared to the thief next to them, "Truly, I tell you, today you will be with me in paradise." As anyone who's ever done youth work of any kind, you know that the holy practice of hanging out is a critical component of ministry. Yes, there are times of lessons and prayer and service, but you can never underestimate the power of simply being with young people, sharing their space in kitchens, in living rooms, and dining rooms. Jesus was with people, drawing them into his presence and out of isolation, out of alienation. As Luke's gospel unfolds, Jesus' presence, his hangout time, his eating time, is a sign of God's intentions. His intentions for healing and wholeness and restoration in a fractured world. Jesus' time spent with all sorts of people was an embodiment of God with us. Among the long list of losers and outcasts and second and third class citizens was the much hated mixed-blood heretics known as the Samaritans. Last week, Sandy quite ably explored the parable of the Good Samaritan, one of Jesus' most famous lessons, which answered the question, "And who is my neighbor?" with a stick of cultural dynamite, placing the despised Samaritan at center stage. Now, as Luke put his gospel together, interestingly enough, he puts this Mary and Martha story immediately following the story of the Good Samaritan. And I would contend that this story is no less radical, no less explosive. Jesus tramples the barriers of propriety and religious life and social convention by associating with, speaking with, and teaching another seen and not heard class of people. Another cultural loser, namely women. Mary, sitting at the feet of Jesus in the posture of a disciple, a posture and a place reserved only for men in that culture. Mary, elevated by his presence and his very posture and his demeanor with her. There, in Martha's home, in Martha's living room, right under her nose, amidst all her preparations and all her works of hospitality, was nothing less than the redrawing of the order of everything. The redefinition of what it meant to be a woman, what it means to be a person. Not a definition imposed by a culture or a people or a convention or a place, but an invitation to simply be with the one whose very presence embodies God's hope for an alienated and fractured world, including, but definitely not limited to, the alienation and division between men and women in cultures throughout history. Martha, Martha, you are worried and distracted by many things. There is need of only one thing. That one thing Well, for my part, and maybe I'm out on a limb here, I'd say that that one needful thing that Martha was missing in her distraction, the better part that Mary had chosen, was Mary's participation, her recognition in this radical, redemptive presence of Jesus. Mary was living a new reality, the liberty and fresh possibilities as a follower, as a disciple even. Jesus' warm rebuke, Martha. Martha, was not a declaration that her work or her hospitality was inferior. Far from it. It was an invitation to be with Jesus, an invitation to be with the Lord, the friend of outcasts and sinners and losers of every sort. And we are invited too. Thanks be to God.